This is actually the 12th one of the one another's that we have considered. This is the 13th one of these studies. And of course, we're nearing the end of this time. We're at the quarter that we would normally kind of switch gears with, but because of the timing with the holidays, we're going to continue this line of thought until then with your permission. I wonder if you're like I am and looking at all of these actions or expressions of fellowship within the Church of the Lord, if you kind of get the feeling after a while that these are not 12 or 13 or however many different things that we've been talking about, but that they're all very much just different expressions of the same thing. They're very much interrelated, and one of these would not have near the depth of meaning that the Lord means for them to have if it existed in isolation from the others. This one tonight is a great example of what I mean. Encourage one another. At its most shallow level, if this were isolated from other things, this would be no different from watching a high school ball game and telling the kids when they come off the court, "Good job." But seen within the framework of the other one another's, this one has with it the idea that this has not only been something that can be encouraged, but it can also be supported and approved of, and that makes it more meaningful. I want to begin tonight by just asking you to consider the great possibility that exists here. If I'm told and you're told, encourage one another, that means that both of us are capable of actually encouraging another child of God, another human being. And if you think about what that might mean and the extent of the impact of it, if you dwell on that for a minute, I think you'll be amazed. I want to tell you for a minute about someone I never got to meet. His name is Tommy Kelton. I knew of Tommy through John Lou Allen. John and Leo would go down to the valley in South Texas, to Far Texas. Jerry, if you've been down in that area, you have. Tommy preached for the church in Far Texas during those years. And he did a good bit of writing. And so I got further acquainted with him through Bobby Dockery and Bobby's printing work that he did. And Tommy wrote some little books about Jesus and about prayer. And he donated the manuscripts to Gospel Tract work. And any funds that came from it were donated to that and so on. And I ran across in one of those little books some personal comments that Tommy made about himself. I want you to think about this. Very talented writer. Tommy says, "I was a mental patient in and out of state hospitals 20 times from 1963 to 1971. During that time," he said, "I thought if I'd only said or done this, or somebody hadn't said or done that, this whole thing might have been different. And while I was suffering these things, it was difficult to see the hand of God in my life." He says, "Now that I've been out of hospitals for 22 years and living a normal life, I can see, like Paul, that my circumstances turned out for the best. I can see the good that resulted in my life." Now, with that background, I want to take you to something that he wrote that I found. It's about Melchizedek. How many of you are experts on Melchizedek? How many of you can even say his name? You remember the story, don't you, of how Abraham, when he had gone and rescued Lot from the invaders that had captured him and carried him off, and Abraham comes back with the people and all the stuff he had captured, and Melchizedek meets him and blesses him, and Abraham gives him a tenth of everything. You and I know him from Hebrews better, but this is that's the background of what I'm about to share with you. So please bear with me with this, okay? I didn't know Adam was going to read something for us earlier, but that wouldn't have changed this. Remember what I've just told you about Tommy. He says, there's a lot I don't know about Melchizedek, but one thing has made a deep impression on me. God, in Genesis 14, surprised Abraham when he least expected it with this priest who came from nowhere, blesses him, and is never seen or heard of again. God surprises us many times when we least expect it. We never know when some Melchizedek may walk into our lives and be a blessing to us. We also have the same opportunity to be an unexpected blessing to others when they least expect it. And if you're thinking about the possibility, that's what I'm getting at here. We can be a Melchizedek, a mysterious stranger coming from nowhere who brings God's blessing. Being a Melchizedek, you can be someone who tells people who are doing a good job that you appreciate them. You can be an encourager. There are never enough of those around. And then it gives a couple examples. Now, knowing what I told you about his background, think of this. He says, in 1986, I received a letter commending an article I had written on recognizing temptation. The content of that letter was tremendous. It contained no return address and was signed only a sister. A Melchizedek had come into my life at a time it meant much to me. In 1988, I received another letter from one of the most talented women writers in the Brotherhood saying an article of mine, Keep On Writing, I have it in one of his little books, had met her needs. Her comments made me want to keep on writing. Another Melchizedek had come into my life. These letters are framed, think of this, these letters are framed and hang on my wall to remind me that surprise blessings still come when we least expect them. God gives us good gifts, and we're to pass them on as fast as we get them. Expect God to send people into your life to bless you. When you least expect it, look for a blessing. Above all, be a blessing to others. Be a Melchizedek. Now, you can, if you think about that brother's life, you can see how much encouragement from his brothers and sisters in the Lord meant to him. How different from him are you? How many people in this room have a little note or a card or something tucked in a book or a Bible or in the back of a drawer somewhere that someone has given you that you have kept? How many of you can recall in your mind's eye the scene when someone said some word that was like food to you or energy to you. I mean, you think about what encouragement has meant in your life. Now, here's the next question. Can you think of a time when you have served that need toward someone else? Does anybody have a word of yours or a note or some expression of encouragement that they're hanging on to in their heart? Bill?
Well, I have one.
You got one.
I remember back in 85 when a fellow named Bill...
Yeah, that kind of goes with Scott's weather report tonight there, doesn't it? It was like 13 below that day. So you think about this now. What we're talking about is, can you see that I'm talking about something more weighty than just good job, you know, that kind of thing. How is this different? Well, let's look at the practice. I mean, our verse, 1 Thessalonians 5:11, says, therefore, encourage, this is English Standard Version, encourage one another and build one another up just as you are doing. How many of you have other versions of the, other translations of the scriptures with you that you're looking? What other ways is that word translated? Therefore, encourage one another. Comfort is one. All right, comfort one another. Any others? It's used a whole bunch of other times in the New Testament, and I'll try to ask you to think about our English word, our word, encourage. If you put the two words together, two parts of it, just in and courage. So you get the idea. This means to put strength or confidence into someone. How do you do that? If you're sitting at the restaurant and someone says, the server says, do you need more tea? She takes the glass, or he takes the glass, and either replaces it or refills it. That's how you put tea in a glass. How do you put courage in a person? I noticed the New English Bible, the translation says to hearten. So how do you inspire hope or courage or spirit in another person? All right, you do like Johnny? All right, be like Johnny. Johnny doesn't do that for me. I don't know why you... I'm kidding. But you see the idea. What does Johnny do that encourages you? All right. She notices. She calls. She talks to you. She knows what... She listens. So that would be a huge part of the process of putting... Just to pay attention to, right, would be a big part of this. It goes in the New Testament, it involves some specific actions. The original term, I've shortcut this a little bit, but there are two terms, mostly. One main one that appears noun, verb, and an adjective type, and then another one that I'll mention to you. The word means, I've told you before, this word means to call to your side, to call to the side of, to call a person. And so it gets translated with words like the same New Testament terms: exhort, entreat, beseech, teach, urge, comfort, encourage, console, and then in its noun forms, exhortation, consolation, encouragement, that idea. And basically, when it's translated to exhort, it means to urge a person on, to urge him to pursue some course of action, some course of conduct forward, like looking to the future. It's prospectively, it's exhort. Retrospectively, If it's talking about, if it has to do with some trial that's been experienced, then it's usually translated comfort. So it has both of those sides to it. The other main word that's translated encourage in the New Testament is from a term that means to counsel with, or to it's a combination of near and speech. And so it means a speaking closely to anyone. The way we would say it would be a heart-to-heart kind of communication, that idea. And this word gets translated as an appeal, an entreaty, an encouragement or something like that, or a consolation. And one of the dictionaries of New Testament words where I looked this up says that this term involves a greater degree of tenderness than the first time, than the other word does. A greater degree of tenderness. So you get the idea that encouraging involves a whole range of activity or relationship impact among persons. So this kind of operation to build up that is being called for in 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse 11 can have different shades to it. It means it involves coming alongside another person for the purpose of bringing comfort to that person. How many different possible actions might that, or forms might that take? Would it be possible to do it without any words sometimes? Of course, yes. Would it be possible to do it with words? Yes. What kind of, well, they're going to have to be true, they're going to have to be genuine, that kind of thing. Then coming alongside to strengthen, to support another person, which again can involve a whole range of different actions. And it can have the meaning of coming alongside another person to urge that person onward to the goal, or to stir up activity, or to move a person, to help move a person onward in the positive direction. When that person is weary, about out of energy, hands hanging down, knees weak, like Isaiah 35 verse 4. So that's a part of what we're getting at here. It's something that has different kinds of possible, the person can have different needs, and encouraging can take different forms depending on what the needs of the one being encouraged are. I'll tell you about something that happened a few months ago when, several months ago now, when in our family we had been through losses and surgeries and concerns and stuff like that. I got a call from some brother who lives a long ways off from here. He just said, "Bill, are you and Kay being ministered to?" He didn't ask how you doing. He just said it like that. And that probably meant more to me than if someone had done something. Just say, are you and Kay being ministered to? That kind of a thoughtful part of this is the power that encouragement has. And it's a part of, it isn't an isolated thing from devotion to God. This kind of noticing and this kind of concern is a family the family purpose. These several next several verses I've got here, if we had time, we'd look at every one of them to get, specifically. We don't. So I'm going to have to summarize. I just want you to see how widespread of a connection the work of encouraging that we're talking about has to God's family. And you'll remember a lot of these. First off, the Father of mercies comforts. Remember 2 Corinthians 1, verses 3 and 4? This is one of Dennis's favorite passages. We miss them tonight, so you guys give him a call and check on them. But the Father of mercies and the God of all comfort. And you don't see it in the translation there, but it's the word that's translated encouragement. Comfort is. He comforts us in our affliction so that, and he uses the other word, the second word I show you, so that in our that in our being comforted, we can comfort others in our affliction. So put that in a one another setting here. What will give me the ability to be of some comfort to my brothers and sisters, knowing that I have been comforted? So you start, God starts a cycle that it's up to us to continue. If we want our congregation to be more encouraging, we have to jump in the circle and move it along. We have to comfort. We have to encourage. We have to involve ourselves. We have to notice. And one of the reasons that I put on our paper here, you can be an encourager. You can be an unexpected blessing. It's because in the nature of our thinking about this, we can immediately, maybe right now we would be, well, whether somebody has done this for me. I just told you a personal story, for example. It's easy for us to expect that our brothers and sisters will do this for us without expecting ourselves to have to be involved in the process. And that's from our Father, one thing we see. Second, Jesus Christ, the righteous, is an advocate. And again, you don't see it, but the word for advocate is the noun form of the word for encourage. Someone to stand by your side. When? Can you guys remember 1 John 2 and verse 1, the context? If anyone, talking to Christians, if anyone sins, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous, remember? Thirdly, the church walks in the fear of the Lord and the comfort of the Holy Spirit. This is Acts 9, verse 31. You can read these when you have more time, maybe. But after the persecution that started with the death of Stephen and proceeded with the threatenings and the slaughter led by Saul, when Christians are scattered, remember, and it tells us about the conversion of Saul in Acts chapter 9. Well, at the end of that section, this verse occurs. And the church, it continues to increase. And the church walks in the fear of the Lord and the comfort of the Holy Spirit. The Scriptures are the basis of encouragement. This is Romans 15 and verse 4. Things written before time are written for our instruction or our learning, that we, through the patience and comfort of the Scriptures, may have hope. That's the New King James translation, but the word for comfort is encouragement. The ESV translates it endurance and encouragement of the Scriptures. We may have hope. Now, I hope you're seeing what I'm getting at. The Father, the Christ, the Spirit, and the Scriptures all have to do with encouragement. Then the assembly of the church is for encouraging and consoling or comforting. And I might look at exactly how this is said. Paul is arguing why prophesying, that is understandable teaching, is appropriate for the assembly. It speaks to people for their upbuilding and encouragement and consolation. That's what we want to happen in the meeting of the church. And then the encouraging souls to continue in the faith is a part of the mission of the Lord's people. And this one comes from at the end of the first missionary journey, when Paul turns back home and retraces his steps, the congregations he's established. It says that he returned to Lystra, to Iconium, to Antioch, strengthening the souls of the disciples, encouraging them to continue in the faith, and saying that through many tribulations we must enter the kingdom of God. Encouragement is the thing that strengthens people to continue, even if it brings tribulation or trouble. It's quite a role, isn't it, that encouraging has. The Father, the Son, the Spirit, the Scriptures, the church, and the work of the church. All involve this kind of interaction, one another interaction among the Lord's people. Sometimes we think about trying to plan programs and all this kind of thing, and we overlook, I mean, the obvious things like this. What do you know that goes on in people's lives, for good or bad, tough or easy, for joy or sorrow, or in between? Look around and think of what would I feel like for me if I were that other person, and then what can I do to say I notice, I care, I'm for you? That's the program. And all of us have a place in that. Now, there is a laboratory for this. I'm looking at my wrist to see the time, and I've got my watch laying in front of me, and I'm in a good sound mind. There's a place for this, and it's a congregational life, and that's what our term one another tells us. And it's interesting to me, the place where probably this shows up most in the New Testament is in Paul's letters to the Thessalonians, where we read chapter 5, verse 11 here. So I want to take, we got just 5 or 6 minutes left, and I'd like you just to notice how this unfolds. The thing about this, if you guys remember, it looks like from Acts 17, Paul and Silas got run out of town after about 3 weeks in Thessalonica. They leave a congregation where the people who taught them the faith have been run out of town. Are they going to be able to thrive and continue or not? And if you look at the place of encouragement in this letter, I'll call your attention both to our word for encouraging and then the reason for it. 1 Thessalonians 2, verses 11 and 12. Paul says, "You know how, like a father with his children, we exhorted," that's one of the two words I mentioned, each one of you, "and encouraged you," there's the other word, "and charged you," which means we bore testimony to you, "to walk in a manner worthy of God, who called you to his own kingdom and glory. What does he mean by walk? To walk. To live. That's right, Ruth. To live in a manner that is, you don't deserve God, but that's in keeping with the nature of God. That's in keeping with the will of God. To live a lifestyle. And I know you won't be perfect after 3 weeks. I know you're going to have challenges with that kind of opposition around you. But make your way of living in keeping with who your Father is. In 1 Thessalonians 3 and verse 7, and by the way, I left out chapter 3 and verse 2 on your paper. It uses our word also. 3:7. Verse 6, Paul has sent Timothy, waiting for Timothy to hear how they're doing, and Timothy's brought us the good news of your faith and love and reported that you always remember us kindly and long to see you. See, they could have thought, that fellow came in here and taught us the gospel, or taught us about Christ and converted us to him, and then he left, and we have to stay here. They could have felt bad about him, but you long to see us as we long to see you. For this reason, brothers, in all our distress and affliction, we have been comforted about you through your faith. Your faith has an encouraging impact on others. Chapter 4, verse 10, he's talking about their loving one another. He tells them, that's what we teach all who are all the brothers throughout Macedonia. But we urge you, brothers, to do this more and more. And in other words, to love one another and to aspire to live quietly and to mind your own affairs and to work with your hands as we instructed you. Do it more and more. Love each other more and more. And then chapter 4 and verse 18. This is after the section on those who have died in the Lord. It's about the not grieving as those who have no hope. It's telling, remember he talks about the Lord descending with the shout and then those who are alive being caught up together with them and ever being with the Lord. And he says, therefore, encourage one another with these words. Why do you go to Bible class? Not just to serve your own spirituality, although that's a purpose, but to get words to use encouraging each other. Also, look at passages that you could use to encourage one another. In chapter 5, verse 11, he's talked about the day of the Lord not coming like a thief. And he tells them that they're children of the day, and not, they don't belong to darkness, and God's not destined them for wrath, but for salvation. And he says, therefore, encourage one another and build one another up just as you're doing. And that would be as children of light, knowing that. Encourage each other. And then 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 4, the other word for encouraging, but and we urge you, brothers, admonish the idle, encourage the faint-hearted, help the weak, be patient with them all. I ran across a brother back in my younger days who said, if you find a person and you find just a little flicker of flame in his heart, don't go and blow it out. Fan it gently. Encourage the faint-hearted. And then he said, and then Paul goes ahead to say in chapter 2, or not chapter 2, but 2 Thessalonians 2, 16 and 17. A beautiful statement. Now may our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God our Father, who loved us and gave us eternal comfort and good hope through grace, comfort your hearts and establish them in every good work, every good work and word. So was Paul encouraging his readers there? Of course he was. That's a part of this. Now, so if you look at this, there's what I give you, seven different passages there. And it ranges all the way from the kind of strong urging to faithful Christian living to the gentle care for the struggling to the, then the reception of encouragement in our own hearts. I got a bunch more. We'll end here. I notice the phrase I have on your paper. Here's where it comes from a young man who wrote a letter several years ago now to the old newspaper column that was Ann Landers. And one of this young man's friends had taken his own life. And the letter was about that in part, and he was struggling himself. And in it, he wrote this little paragraph: if people want to help, they can. Here are a few things anybody can do. Smile more even to people you don't know. Smile more even to people you don't know. Touch people. Look them in the eye. Let them know you're aware they exist. Be concerned about those you work with. Listen when they talk to you. Spend an extra minute. If someone has a problem, just listening means more than you'll ever know. Now, if that's true in the world, how true is it in the church? I'd think, even more. So, I appreciate your thinking along with this, Bill.
I have a story I read about in the paper one time years ago about a lady that hadn't seen her good friend in a long time. And she walked up to her one day and said, talked to her for a little bit. And finally she said, I want to know how your son is doing, Mrs. Dillinger.
Whoa. Yeah.
Now I have to think that that woman was really interested in that woman's son.
Yeah, and in the woman, and the lady too, for sure. Thanks, Bill. Let's have a word of prayer before we go.